Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, this is Debron Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the third week of March. This week we have as our main subject part two of a rebroadcast of a fascinating discussion that we had with Dr. Fred Sharp on birds and habitats of the Olympic Peninsula. But we are happy to have sound engineer Charlie Fleischman on this side of the mic to help us with the rest of the program. Welcome, Charlie.
Thank you, Debron.
First, let's hear our mystery sound of the week. Yes, our most loyal listeners will not be that mystified by this week's sound, as it is one that we've played before. But not only do I love this sound, and I'm therefore always happy to play it, but I also have a special reason for choosing it this week. So I'll tell you what that is at the end of the program.
Happy first week of spring. The irony is that this first week of spring was wetter and colder than most of the winter has been. Be careful if you are out walking on the beach. There's a nice low tide this week, so you may be inclined to take a stroll, but keep your eyes peeled. All of the wet weather, along with some wind, has made for unstable conditions, and there has been some dangerous sloughing of the steep bluffs that line a good deal of our waterline.
Yeah, I was just out on Sunday, and I saw some massive slides, so do be careful. Things continue to green up out there, with several of the deciduous trees starting to show small leaves now. I smelled one of my favorite scents in all the world for the first time this year, a couple of days ago. The distinctive smell of the cottonwood tree's sticky leaves breaking bud. The native stinging nettles are now out in force in lowland areas and disturbed sites, so watch out for them, both to beware of inadvertently brushing against them and getting stung, as well as carefully collecting them for eating. The tender young shoots and leaves are an excellent source of iron and other nutrients, and a few minutes of steaming will render their stinging hairs completely harmless. The reason they sting is that the hairs are hollow, and each arises from a gland containing formic acid.
One of the best native flower displays at the moment is right across from the KPTZ station at our tiny jewel of a native prairie, Katai Prairie. Pop in there to see brilliant yellow of the lomatium or desert parsley, especially lovely against the violet of the grass widows.
And soon there'll be a really nice crop of common camas, and they are a gorgeous, deep blue-purple color. Birds and Pacific chorus frogs have continued to ramp it up in the singing department. I don't know that I've ever heard so many chorus frogs singing as loudly as I have this year. And I had three tiny Pacific wrens belting out their amazing song this morning, all vying for territory within the space of 100 feet.
Shorebirds can also be seen changing into their breeding plumage. Our common winter resident black-bellied plovers are starting to show the dramatic black belly that they are named for. They are stunning birds in their full breeding plumage, with the male showing a rich ebony face and belly against a pale spangled back, but we usually only see them on our shores in their drab brown-gray winter garb. They breed up in the tundra of Alaska and Canada and should be heading up that way in another month or so.
And lastly, the Kitsap Sun reports that the Olympic National Park is becoming a magnet for scientific research. There were 76 research permits issued last year, a record high for the park, and this does not even include the projects carried out by the park's own staff. Many of the research projects are looking at climate change through studies on snowpack, microfossils, bees, sea anemones, and other subjects, while others are focused on the amazing changes wrought by the recent removal of the two dams up the Elwha River. We greatly look forward to hearing about what they've learned in the next year or two. Our main topic today is the second part of an interview that we did earlier with Dr. Fred Sharp. Fred is a very gifted naturalist, and while most of his recent work has focused on humpback whales in Alaska, he is also an expert on birds of the Olympic Peninsula. Part two of our interview focused on our wetland ecosystems. So we are now up in the alpine, and we're going to work our way back down, right? We're going to go through alpine meadows.
Yeah, what a great place, lofty communities.
What a great place. One of my favorite places on Earth.
And of course, this time of year, the snow is melting out, and we have this incredible flush of summer wildflowers, and it's a great place to celebrate birds. And many of our lowland species that are finished nesting will sort of creep up slope, and so we can have this great diversity of birds up there. And of course, we wanted to celebrate and think about our aquatic habitats that we find in the Olympic Peninsula, and what a great place to start up here in the high mountains where we have these amazing snow accumulation areas, and that's one of the important things for our aquatic resources and fish, that we have these late snowmelt communities which keep our rivers cold and clear and flowing into the drier summer months. And some of the coolest resources that we have for birds are our frozen glaciers, water frozen up into these perennial snowfields and ice sheets. Species such as the rosy finch, they often feed out on these open, frozen areas, and they like to forage on insects that have been stunned or fallen out and out of the air onto these cold ice sheets. And it's also important for species such as Baird sandpipers that will land up here during migration.
Wow.
And in some of the wet meadows, too, we can also find species such as the American pipit in these late snowmelt communities, which tend to prefer moister sites.
And so then we also get avalanche chutes that come in to those areas, right?
That's right. That's right.
As we're going downhill.
And they often tend to be a little bit moister areas. It's these sites where we have actually fingers of deciduous vegetation that extend up from lower elevation. And so it's kind of a neat we see emerging here of upland birds and lower elevation species that creep up, like white-crowned sparrows, song sparrows, and orange-crowned warblers.
And then we get into rivers proper.
Yeah,
of which we have many on the Olympic Peninsula.
Yes, indeed. It's like these wonderful rivers radiating out like the hands on a clock from our mountainous central core. As you know, I know one of your favorite birds is there.
The dipper. It's so cool.
Yeah, dippers are wonderfully adapted species that can forage underwater in our rushing clear rivers, looking for stone crawlers and occasionally nesting under bridge abutments, have wonderfully loud, rich, wren-like songs that carry above the rushing waters.
And also harlequin ducks, right? I mean, we see them on the salt water in such profusion in the winter, and then in the summer they're gone. We're well, where'd they go?
Where'd you go?
And they're up in the rivers nesting.
They find wonderful nesting habitat and sort of mostly in mid-elevation sites. They're like the dipper, they're specially adapted for these rushing waters. They have large, powerful feet that propel them along the bottom and allow them to feed on a variety of these stone crawlers, and they'll nest in a variety of habitats along the riverbanks, under driftwood, and occasionally utilizing snags. In fact, I had the good fortune of actually finding a harlequin nest up in, of all places, in the Elwha Horse Corral.
Wow. And then those rivers channel into lakes. We've got a great diversity of waterfowl.
Indeed, yeah, lakes are awesome. And in fact, I guess some of the best bird watching for lakes is right here in good old town here, Port Townsend, at the Kai Tai Lagoon. And you know, lakes are amazing in that lakes and ponds, in that they have an overlap of aquatic and terrestrial resources, and you tend to get a lot of deciduous vegetation such as alder, cottonwood, and maples, and then you get this emergent succulent vegetation like sedges, and which sedges have edges and rushes around. So it's a great place for seed dabbling species. If you'd be attentive, you can, you know, a great place to look for marsh wrens and common yellow throats. In the bigger tree species, we have yellow warblers and our dabbling ducks and cooed mallards. We also get wood ducks and Canada geese and scops and gadwalls, and of course, quite a number of species of herons and their allies if you're attentive.
Yeah, well, and there it grades into marshlands. Habitat types are not, some of them are very distinct, but usually we get this gradation into a different habitat type.
Exactly. You know, as the lakes, they can outflow, and some of our very broad, slow-moving rivers that are almost lake-like, you can get nesting spotted sandpipers and broods of common mergansers. And, of course, down lower, we've got kind of our marshes and our open areas, which allow for, you know, finer sediments and open, muddy environments, which can bring in a lot of unusual diversity of birds.
Is that where we would find most of the herons and the rails? The rails and the bitterns.
Exactly. Rails and bitterns and soras and green herons.
And so we do get soras here?
We do. We get this delightful little bird that's
I've never seen one. I have longed to see one.
That stomps around in the tules and cattails. And the rails, like the Sora, are ones that you're, again, best off birding by ear for their wonderfully diagnostic and peculiar calls.
Because they're so cryptic.
They are. They are cryptic and small and elusive. Really fun to try to detect.
Yeah. And then we get into estuaries, which are where salt water and fresh water mixes, right?
Exactly. And we have, in fact, some of the most important estuaries on the Pacific coast are at the mouth of the Columbia River, Willapa Bay, and Grays Harbor, and extremely important sites for migratory shorebirds and waterfowl.
And they're so rich in nutrients because they're washed by the tide,
yep.
Nutrients flush in
you
and
got
out.
It. Lots of exposed mud and lots of solar input and sort of diatoms and bacteria and whole really important food chain there. Extremely productive environments and lots of invertebrates down in the mud. And I know there's some researchers that feel like mud is the center of the universe. In many ways, it is for our migratory shorebirds and waterfowl.
And for those that haven't been down to Grays Harbor, they really should make a special trip down and for the shorebird migration in spring, right?
Indeed.
I mean, tens of thousands of
Indeed.
Species of shorebirds
yeah.
come through
yeah.
there.
April's a really, really fun shorebirding and party and lectures down there, so be sure not to miss it.
Yeah. And then from estuaries, we go to beach proper, and I know that there are several different types of beaches. I mean, there are cobble beaches and sand beaches and mud-laden clay,
indeed,
we really can't go into all those fine distinctions, but why don't you just give us a brief overview?
Yeah, I guess one of my favorite are the rocky shorelines. They have distinctive species like wandering tattlers and turnstones and rock shorebirds and surf birds, so you get a very distinctive avifauna utilizing these sites. And of course, our open saltwater ecosystems are also very important that abut up with these habitats.
We don't often see what goes on there, but what do we get in the open saltwater?
Well, probably one of the most important things that happens out there is that we have these offshore islands. Along the outer coast, we have these rocky seabird breeding refuges, and they're very important because they are predator-free environments and they're adjacent to extremely productive waters. These are the sites where we often get offshore winds or winds that blow down the coast, and they produce coastal upwelling and allow these cold, nutrient-rich waters to upwell to the surface, which powers the base of the food chain. And in wintertime, we get our southerly winds, southwesterly winds, which are often coming up from the warmer Japanese Current or the Pineapple Express, so that buffers these communities in winters from extreme cold that we get from the interior. And of course, we get many of our rivers are constantly putting fresh water into the system, particularly the Columbia River plume that moves up north and adds nutrients and tidal fronts, and it's extremely important. And they allow food resources for these coastal islands, and here we find many of our pelagic birds like the leeches and fork-tailed storm petrels, Cassin's offens, and double-crested cormorants. And I know, of course, one of your favorite islands of all times is Protection Island.
I know, and it's right across the way from us here. It's one of the largest nesting colonies for rhinoceros auklets in the world, right?
Yeah, it's fantastic, and it's got some small relictual population of puffins out there and double-crested cormorants and black oyster catchers. And, you know, of course, salt water is also extremely important because surrounding these areas, and especially in wintertime, that's when these habitats are really at their most amazing, because we have lots of wintering ducks and loons and grebes, scoters, divers and dabblers and auklets. And, of course, our high seas pirates come through in migration, such as the pomerine, long-tailed, and parasitic jaegers.
Do we get jaegers that come through?
Our most common one is a parasitic jaeger.
Uh-huh.
It's predominantly a fall species. And if you're a smaller Bonaparte's gull or mugull, watch out, because they'll be on your tail and trying to get you to cough up your hard-earned catch.
Thank you so much for giving us that great review. Get out there and enjoy all our different habitat types.
You bet, everyone. Great time of year to be out celebrating our birds and Olympic communities. And thanks again for the invitation to come and reflect with you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here.
We have a couple of interesting upcoming natural history events to tell you about. The Jefferson Land Trust Natural History Society invites you to join them on an afternoon walk along the shoreline of the Miller Peninsula on Thursday, March 26th, where they hope to see waterfowl and marine life at low tide. Go to their website at jltnatural.org for more details. Then on Tuesday, March 31st, join the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society for an all-day field trip to the Nisqually National Wildlife Refuge near Olympia. Go to their website at olympicpeninsulaaudubon.org for more information.
And here's our mystery sound again. It's a band-tailed pigeon, and I chose it because I just heard the first one call a couple of days ago, much earlier than I normally hear them. They are a fairly common summer resident in our area, but they're often confused with other species, both by call and by sight. People often mistake their call for that of an owl, or think that it is another species of dove or pigeon. Unlike the common domestic pigeon or rock dove, or the newly invasive European collared dove, the band-tailed pigeon is a native species and quite lovely. More slender and graceful than the domestic pigeon, with distinctive black-tipped yellow bill and yellow legs. It breeds in low-elevation mixed coniferous forests and feeds mostly on the fruits, seeds, and nuts of deciduous trees and shrubs. Though early in the breeding season, mineral springs and tidal flats are also important. Loose colonies of several pairs nesting together are common, with both parents feeding the young pigeon milk, a protein and fat-rich liquid produced in their crops. Our thanks to the Cornell University's great CD collection, Bird Songs of the Pacific Northwest, for the recording. And that's it for KPTC's Nature Now for the third week of March. Thanks very much for joining me, Charlie, and thanks to all of you for listening. Remember, if you missed any of our program or want to listen again, this program will be rebroadcast at 5 p.m. on Thursday, 11:30 on Saturday, and available as a podcast in a week or so at kptz.org. As always,
happy trails! Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Production coordinator is Mike Schlexer. Closing music is Three Little Birds, performed by Bob Marley and the Wailers.